Hey friends, you're tuning in to Wisdom and Wellness with Wit, a podcast for your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, a space to learn and grow, to be encouraged and maybe even challenged just a little bit. Let's journey together and explore what it means to experience the wholeness God has for each of our lives. All right. Well, welcome to another episode of Wisdom and Wellness with Wit. And I'm so honored and excited to get to talk to my friend Pepper Sweeney. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here with you.
Oh, gosh, absolutely. Pepper, you are like an enigma. I feel like you've done so many things and you're so wise in so many areas of life. And we met because of Women Evolve, which is such an amazing ministry. And I thought when I first met you, I thought like, that's what you do. And then I was like, oh, you do like everything plus, and then come to learn, like, you're just the wisest and kindest soul. And so I feel, cause everybody was always like, you got to get to know Pepper. And I was like, awesome. Yeah, I'm down. And then as I just started to pick your brain a little bit, I noticed everybody was always asking you like these deep questions, and I'm such a deep question. I love asking deep questions. I was like, man, you got a lot of knowledge in you, but a lot of love and like compassion as well. And I think that's just what, I mean, draws people to you. And then I was excited because I realized that you host a podcast with your friends, and you guys are all just phenomenal. And I'm such a fan. So
yeah. Yeah. So the Being Known podcast with Dr. Yeah. Kurt Thompson, who's yeah. we've been friends for a really long time. And that is that. A complete labor of love for me to get to do that. Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Well, and I think that's even just what, I was like, okay, he's already talking a lot about this, because I wanted to, you know, just pick your brain on this idea of like relationships and just mm-hmm. vulnerability and these things that we all have to navigate. But they can be really tough, and they can, I know it's like this beautiful journey, but there's a lot of hard stuff that we kind of have to go through to get to like the close, the good, like the gooey center, at the middle of relationships. And I know that you and your wife, you've been married for, it's over 31 years, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. 32 years this year.
Wow. Congrats. Yeah, we've been married.
Thank you. And we met young, so we dated for a long time before we got married. So we dated for seven years before we got married.
Wow.
So I have, she's been in my life way over half of my life. And, and you know, I wouldn't be half the man that I am today without her having been by my side for all of these years. So
that's so cool.
You know, choose well, I think is the lesson there.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, yeah. So I think, I mean, I'd love to just start it off by, I know vulnerability, we think of it, of course, in, you know, romantic relationships and choosing partners. Cause that can be where it can be really scary. But in your marriage, did you notice, like, have there been just some pivotal moments in your life where it really required you to be willing to have some more, just openness and vulnerability? Cause I know I'm not married, but I just hear of how when you get married, so much of it is kind of, unlearning who you are by yourself and being willing to kind of open up to somebody else.
Yeah, there is certainly a lot of that. And there is this mm-hmm. intangible thing. I've told a lot of people that when you do get married, there's this thing that happens that just, mm-hmm. you know, it's different than the day before. And, and so for me, I think in our relationship, a lot of the harder things that we've had to go through in the last 30 years are the things that have, you know, brought out the most vulnerability and intimacy, mm-hmm. in our relationship. You know, when, you know, you it's two people together, and then if you bring kids into the mix and all of the heartache and things that can happen there, you know, one particular, so when my you know, it's beautiful being a dad, mm-hmm. is my favorite, you know, thing, It's also not easy. And I remember when, so we have three kids and they're all, you know, young adults or adults at this point. Yeah. But when my daughter, my second daughter was born, Hannah, she had undiagnosed, it was reflux, right? And so the doctor didn't know what it was. And so every night, she would cry from 7 o'clock at night until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And I was working in the theater at night, and I would come home and literally my wife would be standing there holding me a child that was screaming because we already had another child that was trying to sleep. And just the intense, you know, hard time of that. And just, you know, having to, you know, you've got no sleep, you've got, you know, this child that you're responsible for and trying to maintain your relationship. And sometimes in those moments, you know, your relationship can feel like it's taking a second place or a third place, but you've got to find ways back to it all the time. And then, you know, when my third child was born, without telling the whole story, because it's kind of a long story, but she was an acardiac twin. She was, we had two babies with one heart, basically. And it was misdiagnosed and we didn't know what was going on for the longest time. And they had to do an emergency C-section when she was about 27 weeks old. In the course of the pregnancy, we also found out that my wife had cancer. And so dealing with all of these things and, you know, it was really a time in my life also where, you know, we often talk about how when we look back, we can see God's tapestry through, through, you know, but it was a time in my life where I was experiencing God's tapestry in the moment to the point that when we got to Cedar Sinai Hospital out in California, and as a, you know, a chance, we ended up in front of this doctor who was experienced with acardiac twins. He turns out, you know, he's telling me all of this. He's telling us what's happening. We didn't know what was happening. He's telling us what's happening, what we needed to do. She needed to be induced that day and all this. But as he's telling me, saying this to me, I'm looking at him and I'm having the realization that before he was born, God knew that he was going to have this, this child was going to be born that had the ability and the means to make it to this moment in life to give us the best chance and to give my baby the best chance.
Wow.
And I was having moments like that all the way through. So, so when Hope was born,
Name.
Yes. Which, you know, she wasn't named until she was born. I can tell you
that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, she also, the reason why we found out that my wife had cancer, that Nell had cancer, was because we were pregnant. I mean, we wouldn't have known otherwise, and Nell would have been possibly riddled with cancer in a year and had not had any symptoms. So, you know, so she before she was even born, she played a role in saving my wife's life, which is, you know, amazing. And so then she was in therapy for 3 years. She was in the hospital for the first 4 months of her life. And it was just this stressful, you know, hard, hard stuff. But it's in that, in those times, as I look back, where we were the most vulnerable and the most intimate, not with one another and also with God. Right. I mean, and so it's not always the fun and the joy and the things that spark intimacy and vulnerability.
Totally.
But it's the hard things that you have to go through.
Totally.
And we all, it may not be the same thing that I've gone through, but we all go through hard things.
Right.
And the key is to not go through them alone. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really good. Cause I think for me, like, vulnerability shows up in ways in which, like, when people have, like, hurt my feelings or, you know, that's for me really hard, I think. And I know there's, like, conversations of that difference between, like, vulnerability and transparency and all of these kinds of things.
Right.
But for me, I think it's when I'm having to actually tell you that you did something that I feel, even if, like, you know, the wise part of me is like, he didn't mean that when he said it, but my feelings still feel really hurt. for some reason, that for me is really, really hard. That feels more vulnerable than, I don't know, telling somebody my deepest, darkest secret or something, you know?
That's interesting. You know, it's so important to, if you feel a rupture with somebody that and we all want those relationships to continue. It's so important to go and try to repair that. And it is hard. It is a very vulnerable thing to have to go and say to somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a friend of mine out in California. He was a new friend. And I really, we were very obviously fond of each other. And, you know, from right away, we were working together on a project. And I had said something, unbeknownst to me, that was misinterpreted and was hurtful. And, and the next day he picked up the phone and he called me up and he said, listen, I got to talk to you about something. He said, if I didn't care about you, I wouldn't have this conversation. I wouldn't even, you know, he said, but I feel like we've got the potential of a friendship here. And, you know, this is what you said. And I've got to call you on it.
Yeah.
And the first thing I said was, thank you so much, because it would have been so easy to just cut me off and, you know, just be angry with me because I totally understand where you're coming from, why you would think that. Let me explain to you where I was coming from and what I was trying to say. And, and I obviously did poorly. And the amount of respect that I gained for Dave out of that, I mean, you know, was just off the charts. We're still friends and, and deeper friends because of that.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think is so difficult about vulnerability? I mean, I know it's kind of in the name. It's vulnerable, but it just, it's
You know, it's interesting because the one thing that I've been learning and thinking about is at its essence, vulnerability is not something that we do.
Yeah.
Vulnerability is something that we are. I mean, we as humans are vulnerable, right? I mean, if you or I were dropped into the Antarctic without any clothes, we would know our vulnerability right away, right? We would know we are vulnerable. Like if we were if we were put in front of predators and had no way to protect ourselves, we would be vulnerable. And it's that same kind of feeling when we are wanting to open ourselves up and wanting to take a chance at being vulnerable with people, at doing vulnerability. I think it's that same kind of, that's those same kind of fears come up because vulnerability is this place of, that takes courage and there's a lot of fear behind it because I think you wonder, you know, what's going to happen if, you know, if this person doesn't accept what I have to say, or if they, you know, and one of the things that, you know, like even I tell my kids is, you know, to always ask yourself the question of, okay, so what then? Right. Mm-hmm. So say someone says, you know, I'm really afraid to go and talk to this person about, you know, this situation or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll say, okay, so what do you think is going to happen if you say it? What's going to happen? Like, what is the outcome that's going to happen? That, where is this fear? And they'll say, well, you know, I'm going to be rejected. I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to be, okay, so what's going to happen if you're rejected? What's going to happen if you're embarrassed? I mean, what is it? What is the thing? Get to the core of what it is that's causing this anxiety in you. Because honestly, vulnerabilities, I mean, because like I said, we already are vulnerable. So you might as well embrace it. You might as well embrace it, you know? Brene Brown talks about the idea of going in leadership, but I think it's a way to go through life with a soft front and a strong back. Right. And my mom was a model of this far before Brene Brown was even born. She was this, you know, she was this woman that went through life that she was so open, or still is. She's 91 years old and doing amazing. She's so open and yet so firm and strong in her convictions that, you know, so she could she could be in the room with anybody and she could have conversations with anybody and not have to give up that strength that carried her from behind.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's, yeah, because it, and for those listening, really, I'm asking Pepper on my podcast because I needed a personal coaching session. Because, like, this subject is so, it's so hard for me. But I, you know, when I think about, like you're saying, okay, so like rejection and embarrassment, because I've walked away from friendships, like just flat out. I think there was more embarrassment about what I felt about what happened. You know, like I think a lot of times I've tried to reason my way out, and I feel like I know other people who have done this where it's like justifying why I shouldn't feel the way that I feel, you know? And then, so then it's just trying to be like, all right, I'm just going to move on. But I stop relating to that person in the process because I do have this deep hurt or even probably just anger because I never actually, stated it. So it is, so vulnerability is, it's being, it's not doing. So is it that there's just areas that we feel less secure about? And so then those are like our vulnerabilities. Maybe if we haven't built up like a strong, I guess, like back to it.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is, I mean, you know, I'm discovering things about myself right now.
Yeah.
Things that I thought I dealt with already. You know, there's been some triggering lately of some things and I'm like, what is happening here? Why? And I've been able to think about some things from childhood where, you know, I had great parents, had a great family and all that I wouldn't be the person that I am without them, but they're people.
Right.
And totally. so there were times where I wasn't feeling soothed, safe, secure. And so those things still rear their ugly head sometimes. And I still have tools. I use tools that I needed then sometimes today that are obsolete today. I don't need those same tools anymore. So I need to put those down and really deal with the things that are in front of me. Uh-huh. I think that vulnerability it takes courage. There have been times for me with people that, you know, and I think we get burned, right? We get burned by people. You share something, the next thing you know, other people are coming up to you and asking you about it. And you're like, wait a minute, what part of confidentiality didn't you understand?
Right.
But it's so important that you just have to keep going back to the well. You have to keep going back and putting the bucket back in and finding a way to trust another person, you know? And I think that in finding those people, it does take time. You know, you mentioned earlier this idea between transparency and vulnerability, and there is a difference.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it takes a while to earn someone's transparency, and it takes a while for them to earn your transparency as well. And so you have to be able to discern who are safe people, who are the people that you can, you know, that you can really share all your things with. You know, I've been so fortunate in my life in that, you know, as I talked about my childhood, there were things that I would have liked to have gotten from my dad that I didn't get.
Yeah.
I think, you know, my son's probably saying the same thing today about me.
Yeah.
But there are things that I didn't get. And you know, and the reason why I didn't get them is he didn't have them to give me. You know, I found out in my adult life some of the real horrors that he had to go through as a child. And totally. So we give what we have, right? We can't give what we don't have. So, you know, for me, it was this idea of, I wanted to hear from my father, well done, I'm proud of you. And quite frankly, I love you, which he had a very hard time saying those things. He showed them in other ways, but the words just couldn't come. It was a very, very difficult thing for him. And so there was a time probably around the age of when I was probably a junior high or so where I would hear him come home and I would sneak out the cellar door because I didn't want to face what was coming. Because I knew he wasn't going to say, you know, good job, what you, you know, with what you did today. And it was going to be the polar opposite. And so like I've been dealing with things like that has come back up in my, you know, and my friend, Dr. Kurt Thompson will say, it's going to keep, you know, you just have to, it takes repetition. It takes time. It takes, you know, you have to keep going back to it, keep going back to it. And it'll keep, things will keep coming up. And sometimes they come up and surprise us, things that we didn't realize were even, even there.
Wow. Yeah, it does. It does make sense. It feels like you're like, God, didn't we process this? And he's like, well, layer one, we did. Yes.
That's exactly right. That's a, there's a lot of layers to that onion.
There's so many layers.
I can't believe I'm not done with this already. Come on. Let's move on.
Aren't I perfectly healed? Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Man. So it doesn't happen. That never happens.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's all a journey.
For sure.
I don't know if there's, I mean, is there a finish line? I'll tell you, you know, I mentioned my mom.
Yeah.
Who's 91 years old. And
yeah,
she is still learning. She's the most inspiring person to me. That's amazing. It wasn't that, I think it was probably about 6 months ago that she said, you know, I really got to look at my ego a little bit more.
Wow. Come on, mom.
I said, that's awesome. I don't know that you really do, but yeah. But I think it's fantastic that you want to look at it. And she's,
Wow. I love that. Yeah. And that's really cool. I think, you know, the reason that I love, there's a lot of reasons, but I love your guys' podcast being known because you can tell that your guys' friendship is like so special to each one of you. And I love that. Cause I do think too, even just in men, it feels like relationships are maybe less of an encouraged value or, you know, because of just kind of some inherent traits of men can't be vulnerable or have emotions, all that kind of stuff. So I love that, you know, you can really see your guys' friendship and relationship. What do you think have been like just some keys for you in nurturing these kinds of friendships and relationships? Because I assume there have been a lot of hurts and then healing and
You know, the where I was reminds me of where I was going to go before. So with when I got to be probably in my late 20s and 30s, in those areas, especially where I felt like I wasn't getting things from my father that I wanted, or I hadn't gotten them, I went looking for them in other men. And I was so fortunate to have these mentors that, I mean, it was really an embarrassment of riches. I had a mentor who was a spiritual mentor who I met with for 15 years at 6 o'clock in the morning, every Wednesday morning. And that relationship taught me so much about, trust and vulnerability. He was probably in his 70s and I was in my late 20s, early 30s when we first started meeting. And we would both, it was a two-way street. We would both share any shame that we had in our lives. We would both share, you know, all the things. And I remember often times where I would walk in. It was at Dupar's Restaurant, Studio City. You probably. So I would walk in at 6 a.m. and he would be sitting there, and I would offload some things to him, and he would say something like, you know, I love you more than I did when you walked in.
Wow.
And that to me, you know, somebody that really sees me, knows me, knows my dark stuff and stays in the room and gazes at me, dwells with me and says, I love you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Jesus, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the, that's how I've experienced God in my life is in those moments. Right. And so getting that and that, you know, those 15 years of being with him, with Gene, was a tremendous asset for me as far as learning how to be vulnerable and learning how to be in relationship with people. And relationship is just always the priority for me. I mean,
yeah,
I'll be working on a project and yes, the play's the thing, right? I mean, we're mm-hmm. if it's a production, we all have to be, you know, bottom line is what happens on stage has to be the best and it's got to be mm-hmm. what we want and everything, mm-hmm. but not mm-hmm. at the expense of the people in the room.
Mm.
I refuse to.
Yeah.
And I've been in situations, trust me, I've been in situations
for sure.
where if, yeah. where other leaders have,
yeah.
you know, just, I've watched them tread all over people and, you know, at this mm-hmm. idea of this greater cause, but I just won't do
yeah.
it. I mean, I think that
yeah.
that relationship is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that, yeah, I think that Gene had a huge impact on me. And then it's just from there, it was taking the chance, you know, with mm-hmm. others and, mm-hmm. And understanding the importance of not being in isolation, of not being, you know, we can't accomplish a full life in isolation. We just can't.
Totally. Right.
We're not supposed to be, mm-hmm. we're not supposed to be in a silo. We're not supposed to be mm-hmm. alone. And it's no way for us to understand ourselves and no way for us
right.
to understand one another. And so
right. yeah.
once I fully understood the importance of it,
mm-hmm.
then I just went for it. And,
wow.
You know, I have great
yeah.
friends, Kurt being one. Mm-hmm. I have several people that, you know, know all my stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they haven't run
yeah.
yet. So that's
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's just amazing that you recognized, you know, the value and importance of relationships at that age, because I think a lot of us, we just don't put the value on it because maybe we've experienced it in a negative way, or maybe, you know, like with your dad or, you know, family that we struggle with, then it puts a damper on like really wanting to be courageous and bold, because I've tried so many times in the past and it didn't really work. And so there's, I know places in my life where I was just like, I'm just better off. It's just safer by myself. It sucks, but it's safer.
Yeah.
The
problem is, relationships are a legitimate need, right?
It's yeah.
a legitimate
yeah.
need. I think it was Oz Guinness was the first one that I ever heard say, talk about sin is, going after legitimate needs illegitimately.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so if you don't, if you don't put yourself out there and get yourself out of isolation and take a chance in relationships, the need is still going to be there and you're going to be doing something
yeah.
to fill that need. You just are.
Right.
Know? And if it's you sitting alone in your room or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
it's not what we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. One of my mentors talks a lot about like needs and values. And yeah, she's saying the need's always going to be getting met. It's just whether it's yeah. healthy or not. And
that's exactly right.
Most times we're getting them met very,
yeah.
very unhealthy ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. How have you noticed, like, I mean, obviously you've mentioned Jesus and all of this, but like, how has this changed your relationship or, you know, really helped nurture your relationship with God and your faith in this way? Because I think a lot of us, I don't know if you would agree, do you think we relate to Jesus the same way we relate to others in terms of vulnerability and just attachment and all those kinds of things?
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, I'll say, okay, so, you know, we talk a lot about the love of God. And
yeah.
For me, and I'm not putting this on your listeners or anybody else, but for me,
yeah,
that's a difficult concept
yeah.
to just sit here and say, okay, I feel
mm-hmm.
God's
mm-hmm.
love. I feel, I acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he does.
Yeah.
The best me that I am is when I wake up in the morning and I say, I have a God who delights in me
mm-hmm.
and I take that with me all day long
yeah.
and how that impacts the rest of the world that mm-hmm. I run into is
yeah.
wonderful. But having said that, the way for me to truly tangibly understand that is through people.
Yeah.
Is, you know, like I talked about Gene, who looked at me and said, I love you more than I did when you walked in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the glory of God,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
In the, the Being Known podcast, we talk about these confessional communities that Dr. Thompson has started. And
I want to go to one so badly.
Well, he told a story in his book, The Deepest Place, his latest book. He told a story about a woman who, you know, was, you know, he told the whole story about her childhood and everything and how she was, but she had a lot of shame. And she came to him as a patient. And after working with him for a while, she was ready for a confessional community where it's like a group of 8 to 10 people. And basically you're given about 20 minutes to tell your story. You don't just tell it once. You come back to it all the time because we don't just tell our story honestly even to ourselves. We have to keep telling it and keep telling it to get to the most honest story that we can tell. So anyway, this woman goes to the confessional community and it's her first time to share. And she shares all of her stuff to the point that she's able. And a lot of it was very shameful for her. And she's staring at the floor, feeling the shame after having said these things. She's terrified at what she just did.
Right.
And she gets the courage to look up and look at the first person. And what she receives back is someone looking at her lovingly, gazing at her, staying. And she then gets the courage to look to the next person and she gets the same thing back. She gets the courage. And by the fifth, sixth person, that shame is gone. And Kurt describes that as being the true glory of God.
Wow.
Like you're experiencing the glory of God through others who are seeing you for who you are and staying and loving and reflecting back to you and what's happening. This is a whole other subject, but what's happening in the room neurobiologically is incredible. Like, you know, think changes in my brain because of your story and changes in, you know, all of that kind of thing. But these confessional communities that they're building are really amazing in helping people to, rid their lives of shame as much as possible. Kurt calls it practice for being human. And so it's that experience, it's those kind of experiences where, I feel the intimacy of God, the intimacy of Jesus. It's, you know, and then of course in the Word and of course in nature I do as well, but without those first, I think we're really being able to feel it in my chest, in the room. I don't know if the, I don't know if the experience would be the same.
No, I totally get you. Would you say, has it negatively affected how you view God when you're going through seasons maybe of conflict or tough times with people? I think I've done that.
Because I know people, you know, and it's going to happen with people. It's just going to happen with people. It just is. You know, I know that at this point I can look back and I haven't always had this outlook. Like when I've gotten burned by people, like I talked about earlier, where people, you know, took my confidences to the prayer chain or whatever they did, you know, I was angry and I was, my reaction was, I don't really want to do this people thing anymore. And you're a so-and-so and you, you know, all this kind of thing. But now I look back and I'm like, you know what? They just weren't ready to be trusted. They probably have grown since that time. And I didn't choose wisely in who I was going to for counsel. I mean, that was, there was part of that.
Totally.
So it is this, there is a discernment that has to happen, but it's, I try to see people, as God sees them. You know, there's a, Kurt's been doing, I can't keep bringing up my friend Kurt, but he's been doing this practice lately that I think is phenomenal. There's people in his life, as there are in all of our lives, who we need to forgive for whatever reasons. And so he has been sitting at his dining room table and going through, you know, there's this sense of, you need to imagine, it's going from imagination to incarnation, right? You need to imagine things before they can actually. So he's imagining that he's there with the person that he has the conflict with, and that Jesus is sitting at the table as well. And Jesus is saying, I want you to see them as I see them. And and you know, a lot of us will go into a situation like that. Like, I don't want to see them as you see them.
I don't want to.
Don't you know how I see them? Don't you know what they did to me? You know, kind of thing. But as I say that, I still know there are people in my life and in my past who I need to be sitting at that table with too.
Totally.
And going through that process.
Yeah.
But I don't, and that would be like, you know, when my daughter was in the hospital, it would be like saying, Jesus, why did you do this? I don't blame you, but it wasn't. It was, I know you're with me. I know you're with me in this relationship. I know you want me to learn something from this.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you love them too. And, you know, I hope you can get me there. Help me get there.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really powerful because I think we see people and we also can see God as a means to an end, even a means to meeting my needs as well, rather than, and I think I've definitely used people in that way to where I was like, I thought we were closer than we were, but I was like, nope, you were perfectly meeting whatever, you know, emotional needs I needed. I wasn't seeing you, you know, the way, I was not asking God to show me the way he sees you.
Right.
I was asking him to see you the way I see you.
That's exactly right. That's a big switch.
That's a big switch because I need to be vindicated. Yeah. For my hurt and my pain. But that, I imagine that, that takes a lot. Yeah. A lot of maturity and a lot of time with God. I think just like relational time of it's not that we have to learn to trust him because he's already trustworthy, but it's that journey.
Yeah. He is trustworthy, but we still have to learn it. I think, we still have to learn it. I mean, when people come into your life and they're trustworthy, you don't know that right away.
You don't
know until, you know, like another Brene Brown thing is the jar of marbles, right? Like she looked at when the friends that add marbles, the people in your life that add marbles to your jar, those are the ones you want to keep building equity with and keep building trust with. Those that are takers of the marbles all the time. There are just people that, you know, for whatever reason are not ready for that kind of relationship with you.
Right.
And so,
No, that's good. When you were talking about the confessional communities, I was reminded I did a 10-day backpacking trip in college because I was a resident advisor. And at the time, I did not like hiking. I mean, I still don't like hiking. I like nature more than I used to. But each night, each person had to tell their story. And so these are completely new people. And at the time, I hated it. And I was dreading. I waited till like the last possible night to have to do it. Cause I was like, I don't even know what to say about myself. Like I'm trying to think of like the interesting things or like the unique things, you know? And I just remember like, I told my story super abbreviated. And then they all just kept asking questions like, oh, when you said this, like, and afterwards I was like, man, I wish I had done this the first night because I was like the relationship that we built after that night, like I had a lot more endearing thoughts and like about them. So I was like, man, I wish I had taken this time right at the beginning to like really, we were getting to know each other in general, but for some reason, their interest, not for some reason, what you're talking about, their interest in my story. And they're like, wait, you said this, like expound on that. I felt so seen. I felt known. I felt like, oh, these people, okay, they're not just putting up with me because I'm here. Like they genuinely, and it made such an impact on me. So I love that idea. It is scary though. It is very scary to be like, here's all my trash. Enjoy.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, there's the question is asked is how does Whitney's story make you feel? And someone will say, you know, it made me really angry to hear what that one person did to you. And you can be like, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. And then it impacts you in a way, in a new way. You start hearing your story in a different way because of other people's reflections of your story. And, you know, it's just, it's really powerful stuff. It really is.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Well, for someone listening, like, and this feels just, and I say someone, and I mean probably me in a romantic sense, this feels like not even doable. Is there like something you would just share and say, like, I don't know. I know you're not like a here's three steps kind of a guy, but any encouragement?
Give me the question. So three steps for, like, what? I'm not going to tell you three steps, but what would the question be?
I like building the courage to take that first step of intimacy. Or putting yourself out there, whether it's a friend or a significant other.
I think the first thing I would say is listen to yourself and what are the things that are stopping you? Like, why don't you want to step out there with this person? You know, and that it may come back that, well, there is this red flag that, you know, you know, and so
totally.
You know, I think you got to listen to those things. But if it's like those things that we were talking about earlier, if it's, you know, what if they don't feel the same way, or what if they, you know, if I get hurt, well, you know, chances are, whenever two or more in the room, somebody's going to get hurt eventually.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's part hurt is part of the, you know, do you think my wife and I haven't hurt each other in the last 31 years?
Right.
I mean, hurt is part of the equation. I mean, you know, it just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Not intentionally, but it can happen.
Totally.
So I think it's like looking at yourself and looking at what it takes for you to be courageous to make the next step. And I think the first thing is what's the problem? What is going to happen if I say this to this person?
Totally.
And then I think there is the discernment of, is this somebody that that has shown me that they are someone that's putting marbles in the jar, that would be a person that would do those kind of things, or are they a taker? You know, and you know, you have part of your answer there. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, you know, in order to really have the full life that we all want, I mean, to experience the beauty that we get to experience while we're on this earth. In order to do that, you have to do it with other people.
Yeah.
I mean, and there is an ebb and flow. There is a definitely a time to be alone, and there's a time to be with others, and there's a time to be alone, and it's a pendulum.
Yeah.
But you have to have that time with others to make the time alone meaningful, and you have to have the time alone to make the time with others meaningful. And so it's a real double, same two sides of the same coin. It's just so worth it. Even, you know, with the times that, you know, I have been hurt or I've been burned or whatever. I don't, without my friendships, my deep relationships, you know, it's the magic, it's the gold. It's where life is at its best. Is enjoying the journey with others, and the joys and the sorrows. I mean, you know, I don't want to look down at a piece of paper that says in case of emergency and not have anybody to write there, you know.
Totally.
And I don't want to wait until life is an emergency to have to think about who those people are in my life.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do the work now.
Yeah.
So that, you know, later, it's like, you know, it's like scripture. It's like poetry. It's like all these things that we think aren't important until we need them. And so you better have them in you so that you can draw from them when it's time. So it's having those deep, deep caring relationships. I have people in my life that I don't deserve to have in my life. Like, they have people that have given over the course of my life, people that have given me have just built life into me, just breathed life into me.
Yeah.
At different times of my life. Mm-hmm. That I guess the only thing I did to deserve it was took the chance of walking through the door, of saying, "Hey, would you like to meet for a cup of coffee?" Mm. You know, that was my 25-year relationship with Gene before he died was started with, "Hey, you want to have a cup of coffee?"
Mm-hmm.
And changed my life.
Yeah.
Changed the trajectory of my life, those conversations.
Wow.
And so it's taken the chance and knowing that the well, there's a lot of water in that well, and some of it's a little tainted and some of it doesn't match what we need, but we just keep going back to the well. We just keep going back to the well.
Yeah. That's so good. I just quickly, when you were saying that, so learning how to nurture and develop, have you learned how to end relationships well that needed to end?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I haven't always done it well.
Yeah.
But it is something that I am actively learning how to do goodbyes better.
Yeah.
Even to the point that like I'm typically, or have been in my life, and I've been working on this quite a bit just in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm the Irish goodbye, right? I'm at a party and I sneak out the back door and don't say goodbye to people and all that kind of thing. And there's a lot of reasons why I do that. I think a lot of it is that is not about necessarily the people that I don't say goodbye to, but it's about how I think about myself.
And totally.
How much do I really mean to these people in order for me to go to them and say goodbye to them? But a proper goodbye is really important. You know, in the confessional communities, they actually do a goodbye liturgy if someone leaves, and you have to commit up front to going through it's kind of a long process of goodbye.
Yeah.
If you're going to leave. So yes, I have had to, end relationships that weren't necessarily healthy. I'm getting better at it.
Yeah.
And I'm learning. I'm learning myself.
Yeah.
You know, because it's probably not my best skill. Henry Cloud has a great book called Necessary Endings, I think. That's a really good resource. And because there are things there, you know, you will find yourselves in relationships where you aren't equally yoked, and somebody else, you know, for whatever reason, it just isn't, it just isn't a thing. And ghosting is not, it's not good for you or them.
No,
totally. You know, and I do think the same thing. I think ghosting, I think the same about ghosting as I do about the Irish goodbye. And that's, you know, what's that saying about you? Right. I mean, what are the areas in your life?
Yeah.
Like, is ghosting really saying I don't, and maybe not in all cases, but in some cases, is it saying this is how I feel about myself? I don't mean enough to that person in order to really have a proper goodbye with them.
Totally.
And if you can have a proper goodbye, it's not always clean.
Yeah.
But it's, it leaves you both in a so much better place. It leaves both parties in such a better place.
I when you were saying that about like sitting someone at the table of Jesus, I was like, ooh, I probably could have done that with some goodbyes too.
Because
that's so good, man. Pepper, thank you. This is so good. I could ask you questions all day because I feel like it's because you've been so introspective with it too, and I feel like you just have such a passion and a desire, but like a humility and a gentleness with it too in some of these spaces. Cause it's just tricky navigating this thing called life, but it's beautiful too. And it's really beautiful to see people walk it out, not perfectly, but, in ways in which like, I would love to be able to talk about relationships in the same way. So thank you for all the hard work you've done and how you guys are sharing with us as well. It's been just so, so beneficial and so helpful for me. So I really appreciate it.
Well, Whitney, I'm excited for you and your podcast. I'm a big fan. I'm a fan of
yours. Thank you.
I love your singing voice. I love your spirit. Thanks. It's been such a joy the times that we've gotten to work together. And I look forward to more of that.
Yeah.
And really, this has been really fun. It's been an honor. Yeah. And I'm just humbled to be here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Like what you hear so far? Click the subscribe button and give me a rating and review. And let's keep this conversation going. You can find me on social media at Whitney Wood Music. You can find any of my latest singles out anywhere that you stream or purchase music under Whitney Wood, as well as my latest passion project. It's a kids EP called BB and Bubba. I'll have the links below so you can find them. Have a great week, everybody.